Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With me, Carly. Hope you are all well, witches. Today, I am so excited to have on the podcast Danielle Dolsky to talk about her new book, Bones and Honey, a heathen prayer book. We will be talking about prayer, ancestral connection, how her practice has changed over the last 20 years, and a look at the word witch itself. So I'm really sorry. These last couple of weeks, my iron levels have been really low and I've just been really run down. Not sick, just absolutely out of it. And it's taken me a little while to get back to some form of normality. I was a bit of a zombie. Anyway, I'm starting to feel back on a roll again. My energy is returning. I'm not there 100%, but getting there. So I just want to apologize if the last couple of weeks it seems I've been a bit wafty. That is not my intention at all. When I recorded last week's podcast, I was so out of it. When I was feeling bummy and out of it, I did have a ton of themes come up that will be coming up on the podcast. In a way, I wonder if that was what it was all about, as I've been down some wild rabbit holes and I can't wait to share with you what they were. Today's book review is quite an older book. I actually read this book end of last year and I didn't review it initially because it gets deep. I will explain why shortly, just some of my hesitations in regards to this book. But this week I realised this book literally never leaves my brain. I regularly find myself just musing over it. The book I'm talking about is The Fairy Faith, an integration of science with spirit, written by Serena Roney Dougal. When I say this author is ahead of her time, this book was published in 2003. It just seems a long way back when I've seen some of the book's themes much more out there in more recent years. This book followed on deliciously following the conversation I had with Kate Ray on the podcast about the Fae. On that episode, we started up a brief discussion around how many people believe perhaps the Fae are connected to aliens. This book delves into the overlap and it will blow your fucking minds. Of course, it looks at the old aspects of fairy lore, but this is more science than fairy tale, or at least applying science to see if the skeptic can be convinced. A book where science and magic meet. The skeptic in me loved this. One thing I love about this book, there are lots of facts in there that I just haven't found in other books or online. It does get really deep, absolutely fascinating. The author is clearly intelligent. She is a parapsychologist who mixes the woo-woo with the science, so it doesn't feel too clinical. She herself resides in Glastonbury and she discusses like some of the sightings that she has had along with other residents of strange lights, eerie encounters that could be fae or alien. This book gets deeply psychological. She looks at psychic awareness, levels of consciousness, which took the book into information on the pineal gland, ayahuasca, DMT, the third eye, the dream state of consciousness, altered state of consciousness that shamans use. I was geeking out. I loved the detail it went into in regards to ancient shamans of the UK. So the wise women, cunning folk, witches, magicians, how different herbs and plants were used in flying ointments, but in more depth than I've seen in other books, how they were used to create out of body experiences and why. It also looked at magic mushrooms, the links between Siberian tribes with the Father Christmas folklore and the shaman and how that all came about, which we did look at on the Dear Goddess episodes. This was such a great take on this in the book. I actually read this after putting out that episode. Sections that blew my mind were about the pineal gland, the earth's magnetic field, electricity and its links to the body, how certain people can affect electricity through their super sensitivity to it. This one statement itself made me start to think about things differently. Electrically, all things are interrelated. The stars, the sun, the moon, the planets, the earth and all its inhabitants. We are electric creatures living in an electric world. The book delves into stone circles and the earth's magnetic field, ley lines, barrows, stones, and their links to traveling from this world to the other world. Then we get into poltergeists and actually how this could be fey activity, which we have loosely discussed on, I think, a previous episode, albeit briefly. Then we get into crop circles, circle dancing, and it's linked to the fey, UFOs and how they could link to the fey and barrows. The book has maps in it to show where UFO sightings have taken place, also fairy sightings, and how this all correlates to ley lines and earthquake epicenters in the UK. Then we get into abductions and changelings, the other world, animism, reincarnation, rebirth, fairy immorality, taboo in the fey realm. That's not even all of it. The only slight criticism I can give of this book is at a couple of points, the author does get a bit preachy on how we should all be living. She's not wrong, it just kind of stings a little bit, but this takes nothing away from the book. This book blew my mind. I am not the most intelligent when it comes to anything scientific. I mean, I left school at 15. Most of my presence there involved being a little shit. I was either in isolation, skiving, or suspended. And if I was there, I was just a twat. Sorry, teachers, you have no idea how much I regret that. But when it came to this book, I loved and could understand the scientific explanations and also was just fascinated by it. It's mixed in with a ton of lore as well. It really is a half and half of magic and science. There is so much in here I haven't found anywhere else when it comes to the research that I do. I didn't find it difficult to read through as it kept my attention. At times I reread some parts just so I could fully grasp the concept, but I actually did manage to. As an older book, you can pick this up on certain websites for around a fiver. Amazon does also stock it. Absolutely loved this book. Haven't seen any other books similar to it. Cannot recommend it enough if you are a lover of the fey or aliens and want to go deep, but also if you are a skeptic. Join me after the break for my interview with Danielle Dolsky. Whoa. Welcome back. I am here with Danielle Dolsky, author of The Holy Wild, Seasons of Moon and Flame, Woman Most Wild, The Holy Wild Grimoire, and most recently, Bones and Honey. A heathen visionary, painter, poet, storyteller, and word witch. She teaches internationally and has facilitated circles, embodiment trainings, communal spell work, and seasonal rituals since 2007. She is the founder of the Hag School and believes in the emerging power of wild collectives and sudden circles of curious dreamers, cunning witches, and rebellious artists in healing our ailing world. Welcome to the show, Danielle.
Thank you, Carly. So happy to be back.
So happy to have you back. And I'm going to try to rein in my fangirling today. And actually speak without turning to I don't know, just turning to a big puddle.
Oh, puddle away.
No, I'm so excited to have you on. And I love your new book. So your new book is called Bones and Honey, which I love the title of. Can you speak a little bit about that title?
Yeah, Bones and Honey is my interpretation, or was when I was trying to think of a title for the book, of this paradox that we are all, well, maybe not all, but many of us are holding the tension of this paradox between knowing that there is a deep, deep, deep seated and necessary grief to these times that we're living in, this global underworld journey, but also sensing the importance, the value, the treasure of, you know, the joy of living and kind of being oriented toward whatever art we're sensing we need to create, or these moments of pure presence that we feel that we are met with just in the mundane day to day, just kind of naming that as our purpose right now, but, you know, kind of holding the bones are what remain after death. So, you know, holding the tension of knowing that, you know, all of this will end, and there is, you know, a world, the world wound is really aching right now. And yet we still have this honey that is this joy of living, and that we really need both. We can't sink too far into the bones. And we can't be too much about the honey either, I don't think, at all times anyway. So Bones and Honey is just holding the tension of that paradox between grief and gratitude and sorrow and joy and, you know, continuing the journey.
I love that. And this is one of the reasons why I love the book, because like you say, there are many different themes in the book, but one of the reasons I really relate, the sections I really related to currently were around grief in all its forms. There were so many parts that I read. There's one in particular that I read when we did our book review, which is Under the Same Stars that you wrote. That particularly got me. And mm-hmm. also your retelling of The Little Match Girl had me in. and I think what I love about this is because often when we read something that it's, you know, like your book, it's almost like your grief feels seen, like the words kind of help you relate to that emotion and that grief that you're going through, or at least it did for me. So yeah, it was particularly special reading quite a few sections around grief in the book. And of course, there are many different themes that run throughout as well. But yeah, very beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, the bones and the grief are can be like less compelling from a sales standpoint or a marketing standpoint, but it really is necessary medicine right now. And so my hope in writing the book was that everybody would find one of those prayers where it's like, oh, okay, that is naming my ache right now. So yeah.
It's exactly that. That's exactly how I felt, honestly. Mm. So you identify as a witch. And actually, this is something I'm really interested to ask you about. You've just touched on the different prayers in the book. How do witches feel about the practice of prayer from your perspective?
Yeah, I know. Well, I can't speak for all witches. I do know that there is a lot of tension around the word prayer. And I too had to kind of re-befriend the word prayer and even the practice of prayer, coming from a really rigid born-again Christian childhood, and then, you know, breaking free from all of that and naming everything that was in that as bad and not something that I wanted in my life anymore. And then slowly as I got older, so I'm about to turn 44, and I can really see how I've kind of gone back maybe in the last 10 years and started to like pick out the little treasures that were there, even though there was also that great wound that was there. So it's a little bit of the bones and honey again. But the etymology of prayer, it just means earnest request. So it doesn't need to necessarily be to a deity. And I think that whether it's the prayers that are in bones and honey or any prayers that we might be speaking, they're very like charms in witchcraft, where, you know, they are meant to be spoken. They are petitions to the unseen, and they do need to consider where they are going. So who are you praying to? But it doesn't need to be a deity. It could be an archetype, or it could be your own future self, or it could be the ancestors or the descendants. So it's sort of extricating the idea, extricating prayer from this notion that it needs to be to God, capital G, and it can really be to anything that you would name as sacred, any entity or even energetic container of meaning that you would name as sacred, that can be where that prayer petition lands. So, you know, I don't know that every witch feels that way. that was my way of re-befriending the word prayer and the practice of prayer. Just, you know, of course I have earnest requests, and my spells are earnest requests. So of course I'm going to pray.
I love the earnest request sentiment and for myself. Like for this year, I really, sorry, not this year, kind of 2023, I really made peace with prayer for myself as well, in terms of kind of because a lot of the witches that I speak to, or kind of who get in contact, who listen to the show, there are many of us that might have had like quite a staunch religious background through family and so on, and that can kind of put the horrors on you to think of prayer. But yeah, like last year I made my peace very much with the act of prayer, you know, in conversation with the goddess overall, you know, just like a higher being, as a kind of as in a sort of universe form and so on. But yeah, I love the term earnest request, and it can be delivered in so many different ways. It's really good to get your perspective on it. We haven't actually spoke much on prayer on the show, so I definitely think that's going to be a bit of a conversation opener with quite a few of our witches.
Yeah.
You've been a practicing witch for more than 20 years now. How has your definition, and actually this is a conversation that I've been having a lot also, so how has your definition of the word witch changed during that time? And also, what shifts have you witnessed in the witchcraft community during recent years?
Ooh, those are very good questions. I mean, when I first started claiming the name witch for myself, it felt incredibly bold for me to do that 20 years ago. And I think I spoke about this when I was on the show last time, because it was such a pivotal moment in my life where I was 25 and I had just had my first son, and I'm having one of those like dark night of the soul moments where you're nursing the baby at 4 a.m. and the world seems like it's like, does nothing make sense? And why am I here? And I just came to this realization that, you know, I didn't want this innocent in my arms to ever have to deny a huge part of who he was, whatever that was going to be at the time. And he's about to fly the nest now. He's going off to college this summer. So
Wow.
You know, now I know, you know, what he has become or who he has become. But in that moment, I didn't. He was just this infant baby. And I was thinking about how, you know, I didn't want him to have to deny who he was or lie about it or hide it. And yet I really was hiding the fact that I was a witch and, you know, I was casting spells, you know, on my own and was a member of like an online, probably the original online coven.
Probably the very first one. Yeah, absolutely.
And but it felt like it needed to be kept secret. And I just decided in that moment that I wasn't going to hide it anymore. I didn't declare that I was going to like scream it from my rooftop or anything, but I wasn't going to consciously hide it, you know, put the altar in the cabinet and do all of the things that I was doing. So I think, you know, in the beginning, my definition of the word witch was, you know, somebody who really claims that name for themselves and also practices witchcraft. So, yeah, you know, they a witch kind of meets both of those two conditions. And I don't know that that definition has changed for me over the years. I still believe that, you know, what makes a witch? A witch is somebody who has claimed that name for themselves and then also practices witchcraft, whatever that looks like for them. Because of course we know practicing witchcraft can look any number of different ways. Something that I was thinking of recently though is like, I think probably when I was younger and maybe up until 2020, I really held true to this idea of like the witch's discipline and that you, if you were going to practice witchcraft, like you really did need to do it and have a kind of container for yourself and boundaries around when you were going to practice and really be pretty rigid about it, because witchcraft is to me very like an art, and we know that we can come up with any number of excuses for why we're not going to write that book or paint that painting. And I think that witchcraft can be similar. You know, we can always come up with an excuse as the day goes on for why we're going to wait to cast that spell until tomorrow, etc. But I think that, you know, as I've gotten older, I've become a little bit more soft with myself because I am very disciplined. And so I do know, you know, if I do intuitively feel called to cast a spell, I will, but I don't necessarily feel like I need to use every single full moon, for example, or if there's a particular cross quarter day, like for instance, my most recent Lunasa, like I usually do a big thing on Lunasa. Past year, I was just so tired because I had taught for most of July. And I was like, you know, I'm just going to like let this one be. And that's going to be how I celebrate this day. And that was absolutely the right thing. So, you know, that second condition of like how you practice witchcraft, you know, I think that looks how it's going to look for you. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're doing something every single day, because witchcraft is a lot about the way you see the world also, and not necessarily about these symbolic actions that we do in our spellcraft. So I've been leaning a little bit more toward that recently.
Absolutely. And obviously you work within witchcraft as well, and sometimes, as you know, like when it comes to a lot of the Sabbaths, you can get so busy and you get to it and you're like, I've just got nothing left in me, like not the best place to perform magic from when you're kind of spent, you know. So it's such a balance of, okay, when have I got this energy that I can, you know, I can do this work. But yeah, it's really interesting. Exactly. I like what you said about the discipline side of things, and sometimes I'm the same, you know, like I kind of, you know, ahead of a full moon or a new moon or whatever Sabbath, I'm like, when that comes around, I'm going to do this. And I get to it and I'm like, I'm absolutely shattered. But, you know, I know that I've got to commit and see it through. And but yeah, it is that balance as well. And yeah, I mean, I'm 41. So I'm a few years, only a couple of years younger than you, Danielle. And it's been a really interesting kind of shift the last 20 years, because I guess I find now how much easier it is to say I am a witch. I identify as a witch than it was back then, you know, hiding my, you know, sort of
Silver Ravenwolf early books and things
like that.
And actually, you know, being able to access resources and online communities, and you know, it was all kind of like hidden away,
right?
Possible a good while back. So yeah, great times to be in.
Right, we had the shop owners. That's what I talk about a lot. Like, you know, newer witches or the witch curious today, you have an infinite number of resources, but really in, you know, the late 90s and the early 2000s when I was you know, starting to cast spells and getting deeper into it and looking for a coven, it was the new age shop owners that you know, would answer the questions. And you know, you could be like, well, what's this wand do? They would just open up this whole box of wisdom that the person behind the counter had. And so yeah, I really think of those, you know, those early shop owners when I was a teenager as being like my original teachers. I mean, they were just trying to tell me something.
Shop owners just fielding questions. No, absolutely resonate and remember those times. What a world to be in from that. It's so like, you know, pros and cons, but yeah, we are very lucky that it's not the same today.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Danielle.
I was just going to say, you had asked, the second part of your question was about how the witchcraft community has changed, or what I notice about how it's changed.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
And of course, it's become more accessible and expansive. And at least in the, I know in the United States, witchcraft is still the fastest growing religion. So like, while the rest of the religions are kind of falling apart, witchcraft is still the one that is growing. And I do think that there's something to this old, you know, idea of the healing medicine goes where it needs to go. So as the landscape of the socio-political landscape of the world gets gnarlier, and you know, the hand of the overculture becomes more and more overbearing, trying to retain its grip, then of course there's going to be this great surge of an interest in witchcraft, because witches are the ones who work with the elements and are, of course, you know, the ones who honor nature, not the only ones, but we do honor nature and our witchcraft, and we want to protect it. And, you know, in the days of climate collapse, in this age of climate collapse that's taking hold, the witch is becoming more and more important. And so the fact that it's the fastest growing religion doesn't really surprise me at all. If witchcraft is medicine and the medicine is going where it needs to go, well, this chapter in the world story is exactly where it needs to go. So we're just all a part of that.
Absolutely. I know you're very conscious as well about, you know, with your work about change. And I know that's quite a, like, you know, from what I've read and so on, it always seems quite a motivation for you. But yeah, I agree. I do really feel like us witches are at the forefront of, you know, looking after the world, looking after nature. And you know, I just think that can only be a good thing. But potentially, you know, what possible backlash could come with that, with the other religions sinking as so it's going to be interesting the next 20 years. That's one thing I do think. But I guess, you know, I do think that when I came into doing the podcast, there was very little here in the UK in terms of podcasts and so on. There were certainly YouTubers, but we've always been behind the States and so on. So I feel like we are still yet to see perhaps a lot of the change and influence of the craft like you guys have. So it is going to be interesting to see how that expands here too. So yes, yeah. Interesting times. I mean, coming back to the witch title, what about the definition of the word witch? How has that changed for you, if it has at all?
I don't know that it has. I think, you know, I've always been, well, for as long as I can remember, I've been a huge word nerd. And so, you know, I've always been conscious of the word witch really means wise. And so thinking about what wisdoms are housed, not only in your own lineages, but also, you know, the ones that you feel called to learn that weren't necessarily in your own lineages, but, you know, learning them with great care and respect. And I think, like, so not just learning it, though, but then putting it into practice, whatever that practice looks like for you. So I don't know that the definition of the word witch has changed. And, like, I don't mind. I know, like, a lot of the more seasoned witches, they are kind of bothered by witchcraft as a social media trend. And I guess there are times when I'm bothered by it.
Yeah, too, yeah.
But not usually. Like, I just find that, you know, I don't have a pattern for when I was a teenager and in my early 20s and trying to figure it out on social media, because it didn't exist. So I don't really know what it would look like. And, you know, maybe I would be making the same, you know, kind of flashy witch aesthetic posts I was that age and witch curious. I don't know what I would have done. So I'm not bothered by the witch as a trend necessarily. Like I said, I think the medicine is going where it needs to go. So if that's what's amplifying the energy of the witch right now, I think it's okay. I haven't seen it harm anything necessarily. I know there was an article in the New York Times recently that was like, when did everybody become a witch?
Yeah, I've seen a few articles of the same, absolutely. My mum always sends me those. I'm like, okay, thanks, mum. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that that's fine. I mean, I don't know that I would have necessarily gotten as many book deals as I have if there wasn't an interest in witchcraft. So I'm fine with it. I think it's okay.
I'm sorry. The one thing I will say, though, is thank goodness I'll always be grateful that during the 90s and the noughties, there was no social media and no evidence of anything I got up to in my kind of late teens.
Same. Yeah, same. I can't imagine. My youngest son is about to turn 15. And I guess I'm not on TikTok, so I can't speak to witch talk or anything, but my youngest son is always showing me these videos about high school in the 90s. Like, I guess, like, you know, it's like, and it's recorded on a camcorder, and he's like, is this what high school was like for you? And it's just like the hallways, you know, with the lockers. And I'm like, yeah, is that not what high school's like anymore? He's like, no, it doesn't look like this at all. I'm just like, you know, kind of stunned by how much the world has changed.
It's so funny you say that, because my daughter's 16 and she always watches things, because they come up on TikTok and various different social media of, like, I guess, like, clubs and raves and all manner of things in the 90s, and she's kind of like in awe of it, you know, because there's no one's just alone. And I'm like, but it seems so basic compared to what you've got now. But she's kind of like thinking it's all I do.
They're into it. It's kind of like how, I mean, I remember, like, being into the 60s and, like, you know, my parents, you know, answering questions and stuff. But I mean, you know, the 60s versus the 90s, it just feels like a very different vibe.
Absolutely. No, I think we've all done that, because I very much did the same when I was younger with the 70s, to be honest. So yeah, I guess being there wasn't as fun as how aesthetically pleasing it looks now.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. So one thing I wanted to ask you, so we already talked about, obviously, I know you have a, so you're an Irish American, and I'm really interested to see how that informs your witchcraft, like how that might influence your practice and so on.
Yeah, it's interesting because I, so my whole mother line is Irish, and we kind of grew up like knowing like you're Irish American, and there was like this tension between my father's side, well, not tension really, but it was a thing sometimes around the holidays. Yeah. So my father's family was not Irish, and when I turned 18, I moved to Ireland, like with no coming home date necessarily. I was like, I'm just gonna go, because I couldn't get out of my parents' house fast enough. And I for sure was not going on like a spiritual quest or like a pilgrimage of any sacred nature, not intending to anyway. And yet it ended up being that. And so I think about, you know, in reflection now about the adolescent rite of passage that, you know, in an indigenous culture we might have, and it would happen, you know, around that time, sometime in adolescence, where you're sort of like, put into the wild to face your ancestors and death, and you know, you face that encounter, and then you're welcomed home as a grown-up or an adult, and that was sort of what that was for me. I mean, it was a gnarly experience in a lot of ways. I didn't go there and like kiss the Blarney Stone. Yeah. I went there and lived and worked and had a job and really struggled and went to bed hungry a lot of the time. And then I did come home. And so thinking about how that those three stages of a rite of passage really mirrored my experience in Ireland. But I did have experiences when I was there of the other world, capital O. I mean, I saw a ghost. Had this really mystical encounter in a field that I don't think I need to go into right now. I had these moments of just knowing like, oh, you know, I'm not alone, and the ancestors are here. I had a moment where, you know, at age 18, you're not really worried necessarily about danger, and at least as much as you should be. And I was a glass collector in a bar, in Temple Bar, and I would walk home at 3 a.m. every night and like not think anything of it, like, oh, this is dangerous for an 18-year-old girl to be walking home by herself. And there was one night where I was walking past these kind of like dodgy flats that were there on my way home, and there was somebody that was there, and they saw me and crossed the street, and they're following me, and then I crossed the street and they crossed the street again, and it was really terrifying, and I thought like, I'm going to die. And I just said this quick prayer to my Irish grandmother, who I actually never met. She died when I was 2 years old, and all of a sudden that person was gone. Like, and it didn't make sense. Like, you know, they were right behind me, and then all of a sudden they're just gone, and there was really nowhere for them to duck into. And like, that marked me, that moment. And then later in life, I would encounter two psychics actually that were like, oh, there was this moment when you were in Ireland where you were definitely going to die and you were saved by your grandmother. Like, two separate psychics told me that. And I'm like, yep, I know exactly when that was. So, you know, thinking about that as a death encounter also. So I had moments like that, that just alerted me to the fact that, you know, there is something beyond us. And so, you know, that part of me that would believe witchcraft isn't real, or, you know, the spell's just something silly that you're doing and it's not going to be heard or received by anything, that kind of started to fall apart the more of those encounters that I had. So my time in Ireland really awakened me to, you know, this ancestral field that's incredibly alive, that hidden intelligence that is the reason why we keep practicing and casting our spells. Yeah, so that's a big way that being an Irish American informs my witchcraft. But I still do. I work a lot with my ancestors, and especially my Irish lineage, and I do a lot with the rocks and stones and moss. Whenever I have friends coming back from Ireland, I'm like, bring me some dirt.
You know what, I've got some Irish ancestry, but going like further back, not as close as your own. But again, I mean, I had all these big ideas of going to Ireland, you know, to kind of like Owini Gat, like Cave of the Cats and all these spiritual places. But yeah. I'm sad to say I've only been in bars in Temple Bar in Dublin. That's about it.
Yeah.
That's all I've got to, so, not in recent years, but you know, my misspent youth was Dublin. But what a place. And the thing is as well, I was speaking to a friend of mine recently who is Irish, and he was like, he went back for Christmas and he just said, you can't tell anyone here that none of this is, you know, you can never have conversations and poo-poo any ideas in regards to folklore and the spirituality. Right. Every time he goes home, he's like installed with all these new old tales that the family has and so on. And it's so solid that's continued for so many years in comparison to many other places. I guess here in the UK and like the rest of the world, like they've held on to the old mm-hmm. ways in so many respects for so long. It's so impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially, you know, in the west of Ireland, like when I go there now, you know, you can just like feel how heavy the ghosts are walking. I had an encounter much more recently. My husband and I went to Clare Island, and we were just staying there for like 3 nights, and this was in 2017. And I was going to sleep like my first night there, and I looked out the window, and we were on like the second or third floor of this B&B. And there's this creature, and it was just right outside the window, and it had red eyes, and it looked very Pooka-like. It, you know, had dark skin and red eyes, and it was just so, I mean, it was weird, but it was also normal that it was there, that I didn't even wake my husband up.
Yeah, no.
And I think about that now, like, that it was just so normal that this strange creature was outside the window, and it didn't seem... It seemed completely ambivalent toward me. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, it didn't feel like it was going to do anything to me. It didn't feel good or bad necessarily, but it was just like checking me out and being like, why are you here? You know, how did you get here? Say again.
Place is there. It's almost like you're just not even surprised they're there, if that makes sense.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah, I wasn't even surprised by it. Versus like now, if there was something like that out my window, and you know, where I live, I'd be very worried about it. But there it was just like, okay, that's how it is here.
Absolutely. No, and I completely resonate with that. And I was gonna say, I mean, throughout Bones and Honey, obviously, if anyone loves like the old tales and folklore and so on, there is so much that is weaved throughout of this book. Like there's so many references to the Kaliak and obviously different, you know, kind of goddesses and so on that I loved. So yeah, for me, they were some of the stories and, you know, different parts that I really honed in on first.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you.
And obviously you've got other books, including The Holy Wild, The Holy Wild Grimoire. I'm actually looking at them. I've got them all on my shelf in front of me. Seasons of Moon and Flame, Women Most Wild. But you've also got your Oracle decks, The Sacred Hag's Oracle. I personally felt this book was very different, and I loved it for that. I love all of them in their different forms. But how is Bones and Honey different from your other books?
Yeah, I think it is very different. It's essentially organized around these 13 archetypes that I was thinking about as being medicinal. So going back to this idea of like the medicine goes where it needs to go. So, you know, the witch archetype being so amplified right now. And then, you know, what are the other archetypes as being these kind of bubbles of energy or bubbles of power that could be amplified right now in a way that would be healing for healing on the individual level and then healing on the collective level. So I was sort of thinking about what those archetypes might be. And then in Bones and Honey, each of the 13 chapters, they're named according to those 13 medicinal archetypes. So, you know, the Book of the Wounded Healer, for example. And then within each book, there are 13 prayers. And some of those are, you know, some of those really are look like prayers. And then some of them are more prayer stories or, you know, strange poems that rhyme. So it was thinking about, I was thinking about like the practice of writing the book and how different it was, because when you're writing, well, any of my other books or like a traditional nonfiction book, you know, you can kind of like phone in a couple of paragraphs here and there, because, you know, you're trying to describe something important, but you know, you need to lay the foundations, etc. And not every single paragraph needs to be eloquent and poetic. That's what I mean, not phone it in. But then in Bones and Honey, you know, every paragraph had to be like, you know, a true dedicated, intentional, conscious entity kind of in and of itself, because most of the prayers are only a paragraph long in that book. So in that way, it did take longer to organize and write and make sure the language was the way I wanted it to be. But on the other hand, it was a bit easier, because when I sit down to write, you know, if I'm not writing an article or something specific where I know exactly what form it's going to take, if I'm just sitting down to write for writing's sake, I do write things like the prayers in Bones and Honey. So I had quite a few prayers that were already written, and it was kind of a matter of, in part, like stitching them together and figuring out which archetype was most akin to these prayers. And some of them I had written many years ago. So yeah, but thinking about, you know, the whole book as being like this, my contribution of like amplifying the archetypal medicine that the world needs now. And then also, you know, it's so weird to write a book because you know that you're writing it and it's not actually going to be witnessed by the world for maybe another year or so. Yeah. And so yeah, you're thinking about like, well, I don't really know what the world's going to look like when the book comes out, but you know, we can make predictions.
I genuinely am trying not to, like, I've held back on the fangirling, but the one thing I will say, and I've said this on the previous episode, it hasn't changed. You are my favorite witchy author, because I think your writing is so different. Like, it's so different, and you've always managed to master the storytelling but also the factual side also. And I think that's really difficult to write in both styles. And it was so, I feel like, inevitable but lovely to see with Bones and Honey that it was all of the stories, all of the prayers, you know, a whole compilation of that. I love both your styles of writing, and you know, it was, but it was kind of like, yes, like it's all of the creativity and the beautiful words and so on.
Thank you.
And yeah, just such a beautiful book. And honestly, like, it's massively, most of the listeners will know that a lot of your writing has been like featured on this podcast with like book reviews and lots of ways that you've inspired me. So yeah, I know that a lot of the witches are big fans and will be excited about this one. But yeah, it's stunning, absolutely beautiful. I did want to ask you on that front, really, I mean, what is the one thing you hope the reader will take away from your book, Bones and Honey?
Yeah, well, maybe two things. There's that permission to hold the paradox. I think that we constantly need that permission to be, you know, more than one personality, or to have beliefs that seem to conflict with one another, and to feel more than one thing at once, or to be angry at more than one thing at once. And so that's the first thing, is, you know, the permission to hold the tension of the bones and the honey together, the grief and the gratitude. And then also, as I said in the beginning, I do hope that everyone who reads the book finds just that one prayer within the book that just feels like, okay, that's the reason why I'm reading this right now. I wasn't sure before, but there it is. So I hope that there's at least one prayer for everybody in the book.
Oh, there absolutely is. There's so many themes in the book as well. And obviously we had our book review and talked about each of the different sections and how it was broken down. And there is a soothing balm of words in there for every eventuality, definitely.
Thank you.
I love it. And I'm so grateful, Daniel, that you came on. Thank you so much for coming on to talk about your new book. I am really grateful. I'm really excited to see what, I mean, you probably need a break now. You've been doing a lot, but is there anything that you want to kind of leave us with, tell us about what you're doing before we kind of wrap things up?
Just that I do have a storytelling, calling it an untraining rather than a training, but I do have a storytelling course that's coming up in March, and it's just a 3-month, 9 fairy tale or 9 wonder stories that we're going to kind of unpack and talk about how to facilitate them and kind of tend them for the purpose of transforming self and others. So I'm very excited about that. That's called The Witching Hearth. But yeah, other than that, 2024 is kind of my year of like deep alchemical transformation. Every single life area that I have is undergoing some kind of big shift. And I'm kind of in this place that I'm usually not in January, as my birthday approaches, where I'm like kind of excited for the coming year, because I don't really know what's gonna happen.
I love this. Yeah, the brink of possibilities. Yeah, they're always good years when you're not entirely sure, you know, you kind of got that, you just don't know how it's going to pan out, but lots of different things to come up. I mean, you could also probably do have a bit of a break. You've been creating like mad, so.
Yeah, I do. I kind of get depressed in the break, so I can kind of feel like breaks are nice for like a few weeks, and then after that, I'm like, I'm a little depressed when I'm not making something.
I resonate with that completely, honestly. I will obviously link everything in the show notes so you can find Danielle and everything that she's got coming up. But Danielle, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so grateful.
Thank you, Carly. Thanks so much for having me back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.